Hello and welcome to the Old Time Radio Hour. I'm your host, Justine Ward, and each week we bring you a classic show from radio's golden age. Hope you have an enjoyable Memorial Day. Memorial Day was inaugurated to celebrate the lives of people killed while serving in the armed forces. It's a patriotic holiday and the start of summer. This year we celebrate Memorial Day with two shows from Columbia Workshop, the high-quality show sponsored by CBS to explore all that radio could be. Both of these shows are thoughtful reflections on the contribution of American servicemen toward winning World War II, written the year after the war ended. Parades are a time-honored way of honoring those who have served in the armed forces. The mysterious parade in this next radio show is not so straightforward. This is Columbia Workshop, The Parade, first broadcast on Pearl Harbor Day, December 7th, 1946, on CBS.
At almost exactly 5 minutes of 1 o'clock, the parade got underway. Perhaps the last phrase is not a precise expression of the fact. There was no reliable observer who actually saw the parade get underway. Let us be meticulous and say that in the very near neighborhood of 1 o'clock that day, the parade was marching up Fifth Avenue. Today's Columbia Workshop program, The Parade, was written by Margaret LeWorth, based upon a story by Morris Markey, which appears in the December issue of McCall's magazine. The special musical score was composed and is conducted by Robert W. Stringer, and the workshop director is Richard Samville. We remind you that 5 years ago, the United States was precipitated into war by the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. Now, the parade.
Time, early December 1946. The place, recorder's office, police headquarters, 18th Precinct, New York City. It's 9 o'clock in the morning.
All right, now quiet, quiet. How many of you really saw this thing?
I saw it.
Well, some of you say it didn't happen. Well, now wait a minute. Now see here. Either there was a parade in this city yesterday or there wasn't. Now we're going to get the facts. Officer McShane?
All I know is I got orders.
When?
About 8 o'clock in the morning, right after I come on duty. I got orders to cut off all traffic coming down the avenue.
Who gave you those orders?
A couple of guys in the squad car. I don't know all of them, but those fellas acted like they knew what they were talking about.
And then what happened?
I cut off the cross street traffic, and about 1 o'clock it began.
What began, McShane?
The parade, I'm telling you. They marched up Fifth Avenue like they always do, from downtown right on up.
Excuse me, officer.
Yes, madam?
I was in the park with Tommy, my son, officer. He's 4. He loves parades. We never miss them, and we didn't hear a thing all afternoon.
Well, that could be, ma'am, that you didn't hear anything.
What do you mean? If there was a parade, you could hear the band.
There wasn't any band.
A parade 60 blocks long up Fifth Avenue, and you couldn't hear anything? Now, McShane, this is a serious matter.
He's crazy, Your Honor. I've been selling flags and buttons for parades in this city for 25 years. I heard nothing about no parade yesterday.
Order! Order!
Excuse me, officer.
Yes, what is it? Oh, Your Reverence. You have something to say about all this?
Yes. Yes, I have. There was a parade yesterday. I saw it.
So did I, officer. I saw it with my own eyes.
Oh, no. Order!
I'd like to testify, too, if I may. I saw the parade.
So did I.
Heaven help me, so did I.
This requires some investigation. A city of 7 million people, a mild and sunny day, crowds out on the streets, and no one agrees whether there was a parade or not. No one, that is, but Timothy McShane, Traffic Squad B, and four witnesses, four unknown people from the city's masses. Perhaps it would be wise to go back to yesterday morning and the four witnesses who were so sure. You, sir, in the blue suit, what is your name?
My name is Benton, Philip Benton. I saw the parade. I can't tell you who was parading. All sorts of people. Yet in the sun and haze, they looked the same. My business? I manufacture machine parts. I'm president of a company. I have one son. I had one son. We were sitting at home one evening about 5 years ago, my wife, my son, and I. We had a little apartment then on the west side. We were listening to the radio.
According to dispatches from Honolulu...
Turn it off, Philip. Turn it off.
All right, dear.
But this is important, Mother. Don't you realize it's war?
I've listened to all I can. Oh, Harry, your new suits came this afternoon. You can take them back to college with you tomorrow.
Mother, I'm not going back to college tomorrow.
What?
Well, I didn't quite know how to tell you, but I guess it's better to get right to the point. I signed up with the Marines this afternoon.
Harry, you didn't.
Well, that's quite a step to take, son.
Well, there didn't seem to be anything else to do.
You might have talked to us. You might have at least finished this year at school.
All the fellas will be in it. Besides, well, I thought you might like me in a Marine uniform.
I can't talk about it.
Son, I'm proud of what you've done. And I'm not letting you down. About the only thing I could do at my age is make machine parts. But I've already been in touch with Washington.
Oh, good for you, Dad.
They're going to get the best machine parts in the country if I have to make them by hand. That was 5 years ago. My business grew during the war. A lot of things happened. You know how it was. Then the morning of the parade. We were living on Park Avenue by then. My wife was having breakfast in bed. I was at the window.
Philip, you look worn. You need a vacation.
Do I?
You've been working too hard. What's the good of making all that money if you can't spend it?
Sometimes I wonder.
You are in a mood. Why don't we take a trip? Bermuda. Or Mexico. Or Acapulco might be nice now.
I can't get away now.
Work, work, work. Don't you care anything for me? Especially now that...
Oh, of course I do.
Where are you going?
Out for a walk in the park. To think.
Get back, sir. You can't cross the street now.
Why not?
The parade's coming up this way.
What parade?
I don't know, sir. I just got me orders. I'm roping off the streets now.
You blame many parades, if you ask me, tying up the
streets. I'm only doing my duty, sir.
That's how I came to be there when the parade passed. For it passed. I know it passed. I saw it.
So put that down. Philip Benton, business executive of Park Avenue, saw the parade. Next witness.
My name's Gloria Lacey. It was Gloria Dugan. That is, well, I guess I'd better start at the beginning. It was 2 years ago, in a little town upstate. It was a spring evening. I can remember how nervous I was standing there in that strange house.
Do you, Peter, take this woman, Gloria, to be your wedded wife?
I do.
Do you, Gloria, take this man, Peter, to be your wedded husband?
I do.
I pronounce you man and wife.
Oh, Pete.
It's all done, baby. For better or worse. Your mine and the whole Navy and every Nazi submarine and the drink won't keep us apart. I'll be back to you, baby. Don't forget that. I'm coming home to you, Mrs. Dugan.
I'll be waiting, Pete.
$2, please.
And that's how it started. It was romantic, too. Pete had only 3 days, but it was like seeing the whole world for the first time. After he left, it was sort of sensible to come to the city. I got a furnished room and a job as a waitress. It was kind of tough. I guess lots of girls know how that was. Then, one day... I guess you ain't interested in all that. I'm not the only girl who... You wanted to know about the parade, yeah? I ain't apt to forget it. Eddie came to me in the flat that morning, and we were drinking our coffee, me and Eddie.
Love me a little, kid?
Sure, Eddie, sure I do. Only you think my being with you wasn't enough. You gotta talk about it all the time.
Sure, I gotta talk about it. And if you don't like the idea...
Eddie, put me down on the floor, you big bully.
Okay, baby, okay. Give us a kiss first.
Why don't you save that muscle for them cars you knock apart of the garage?
Listen, I'm the best mechanic in Hoboken. And a lot more reliable than the Navy.
Leave off that.
Well, did he come home to you? Just took a powder, don't kid me. Where are you going?
Out for a walk. I gotta do some marketing.
You're sore.
No, I ain't sore, Eddie. I ain't sore. On this sidewalk.
But not in the gutter. The parade's coming through in a few minutes.
A parade? Gee, who's parade?
I don't know, miss. Move along.
Oh, not me. If there's a parade, little Glory isn't gonna miss it. No, sir, I'm staying right here. That's how I come to see it. I was standing right there on the edge of the curb. I could have touched him. Only I couldn't. I could only stand and look at him. Like my eyes were frozen in my head. I could only stand and look at him.
A court of law wouldn't consider that conclusive evidence, but we'll add it to the testimony. Gloria Lacey, waitress, saw the parade. Next witness?
My name is Joe Shaw. Yeah, I saw the parade. Nobody's going to tell me different. I guess you might begin back about 10 years ago. Me and my brother Clem, he's my younger brother, living in a rooming house together. We were sitting up one night figuring things.
Not bad, Joe, for the first 6 months. If we finish the year like this...
Chicken feed.
I'm glad to get it.
Sure. You're always satisfied with small-time stuff, but I'm out for big time. Now, what's the first trouble? Too much competition, yeah?
There's enough business for everybody, Joe.
Not for me.
I don't want to do business that way.
Look, Clem, you want to marry Sadie, don't you?
You know I want to marry Sadie.
You got a chance if you play ball with me.
And if I don't...
Start a business of your own, then. I'll give you back half of this. I don't need your share now. Go on, get out.
Okay, Joe. Let's go over the figures. Maybe you know better.
That was Clem. No head for business. But he had a way of making friends, so he stuck it out. We got along pretty well. Had a nice little business. Sort of essential, too. Hardware is. When they started the shooting, Clem enlisted. Tried to talk him out of it, but you couldn't tell him anything. I was doing my part, running the business single-handed with almost no help. You know how that was. The parade? Oh, yeah. The parade.
That morning, I went to see Sadie. I used to go see a regular like. Thought I ought to.
Is that all you can give me this month, Joe?
Business ain't so good, Sadie.
Everybody says times are better. I know Clem always says...
Clem ain't running the business now. You can't get supplies. The help want more money. It's all I got.
Well, thank you, Joe. It was only that Clem always said the business would take care of us.
Do you want the money or don't you? I got things to do.
I want it, Joe.
Keep inside the lines there. Stand back. Hey, where are you going?
Downtown. Well, what's the crowd for?
Haven't you heard about the parade?
What parade?
The parade up Fifth Avenue. It's already started. They'll be along here any time now.
I didn't hear about it. I don't hear anything now.
I can't help that. Stand back.
I see him.
Stand back.
I see him coming now. Look, they're coming along. But they don't make any noise.
They don't make any noise at all. What is that?
So we know Ben Shaw saw it. Yes, that will go into the evidence. Ben Shaw was there, too. Now, are there any more witnesses? Oh, yes, the gentleman in the Oxford cloth coat. Do you want to testify, sir?
There was a parade. I saw it. As God is my witness. But I guess I'd better tell it from the beginning. My name is Claude Cartwright. It began 20 years ago, early summer. My friend Charles and I had just graduated from the theological seminary. One afternoon, we went to call on the bishop to receive our appointments. I remember it as if it were yesterday. Charles walking with his head up in that big stride.
Where do you think we'll be sent, Claude?
I don't know. You might get a mission.
Not after what I said to the dean.
What was that?
We ought to make Christianity work at home before we take it abroad.
Radical, my boy, radical. How do you like that?
You can guess. Claude, let's make a pledge. Just between ourselves.
What kind of pledge?
We know what we want to do. We know there's a lot of good in people if you can find it. There's a way to help people. Let's pledge never to become too satisfied.
I'll pledge that, Charles.
Bishop, only that you both go in humility to whatever task the world calls you.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Well, Charles, you first. How would you like a church big enough for that fine voice of yours?
Where is it, sir?
St. Paul's needs a new assistant.
St. Paul's?
Splendid opportunity.
That means I'd have to do just what they wanted.
I might remind you the church is quite old. You are quite young.
Yes, sir. I might as well say it.
Say what?
I didn't become a minister to step into old shoes.
Indeed.
I don't want a big church that's all wrapped up in paying mortgages and holding parish teas. I want to help people find a way of life, whether they come to church or whether they don't. I want to give them strength to live, not hope to die.
Very commendable, no doubt. And you think St. Paul's isn't large enough for your point of view?
No, it isn't. It isn't.
I didn't see Charles for many years. He went from one poor parish to another. When the war broke out, he was still a drifter. I heard he signed up. Then I lost track of him. We all had heavier duties in those trying years. Oh, yes. Parade. That's what you asked me about. Parade. Well, that morning I was at my desk.
St. Paul's Rectory. Oh, yes, Mrs. Townley. Yes, Dr. Cartwright's right here. For you, sir.
Thank you. Yes? Good morning, Mrs. Townley.
Ah, yes. Yes, of course, I quite agree with you. This morning? Oh. Oh, yes, yes, I can arrange it. I'll be there within an hour. Cancel my appointments until this afternoon, please.
The boys' club, too?
Mrs. Townley is giving the church a new chancel rail. I don't like to offend her.
Sorry, Your Reverence, but you can't cross the street now. The parade's coming any minute.
I didn't know there was a parade today.
Oh, they've already passed 42nd Street.
I'm afraid this is going to tie me up rather badly.
I'd let you through, sir, but I have me orders.
It's all right. It's quite a crowd.
Yes, sir.
Is that the parade coming now?
Yes, sir.
Look at them. Look at them, officer. Look. Their faces. Their faces. Their expressions. They're smiling. Oh, God. They're smiling.
Is that all the testimony? No, we could go on indefinitely. The city is full of people who say they saw it. But surely that is enough to convince you that something took place. Mr. Benton, the executive, Gloria, the waitress, Ben, the salesman, and no less an authority than the Reverend Dr. Cartwright. Yes, there must have been a parade. But it was unlike any parade New York had ever seen before. It started downtown, no one knew exactly where, but there it was. No flags, no bands, nothing but men. Just men, column after column, line after line of marching men, their feet striking the pavement in exact rhythm.
Why can't you hear something? Why don't they make some noise? Why don't they make some noise?
Not a sound. You thought you heard marching feet because you wanted to, but when you looked away, if you could, the city was as silent as if the parade went on.
Why do they look like that? Why do they look that way? Let me out of here. I want a drink.
On they came, men in brown, men in green and drab, men in white, such as the fleet orders at Pearl Harbor and such faces. Men in patched blue denims, dirty, torn, some of them badly stained. It might have been oil. And then it happened. The first unusual incident. It was Gloria, the little waitress, standing there on 28th Street watching them pass. Suddenly she ran into the street, caught at a marcher, a boy in blue denim.
Pete! Oh, merciful heavens, it's you, Pete. It's you. Pete, don't turn away from me. Listen to me. I played a lousy trick on you, Pete. You know it now. Oh, Mother Mary, make him hear me. It wasn't any fun, Pete. You know it wasn't. But I was alone, and you didn't come back. You were gone too long. I didn't know that... Oh, St. Agnes, make him hear me. Pete, forgive me. Forgive me. Look at me. Look at me.
There were those who said he lifted his hands and touched her cheek and smiled at her. But the tide of the march was too strong, and she was cast aside like a leaf from a swift current. By this time, crowds had gathered all along the way. Rich and poor, fashionable and shabby stood together. One thing was odd. In contrast to the serene faces of the men, the crowds looked white and stricken. Everywhere along the line, people broke from the curb to cling for a moment to some marching figure before they, too, were swept from the current.
Mommy, hold me higher. Higher. Oh, I can't see any parade.
Hush, Jimmy. Oh, hush.
It was just below the library that Joe Shaw was standing. You remember he just left his sister-in-law, Sadie. Now, Sadie would have thought his face quite gray. He sagged a little. He twisted his derby in his hand. Suddenly, he too broke from the crowd toward a marcher in dirty drab.
Clem, it's you. You've come back. Oh, don't stare at me like that. I'm admitting it. I was a dirty rat. I robbed Sadie of your share of the business. You know I did. You know it all now. But I'll make it up. I swear I will. I'm paying her back today. Ain't that okay, Clem? Don't look at me like that. Don't.
Joe fell back against the curb. Someone helped him up to the sidewalk. But it seemed the marcher's stern face relaxed. He smiled slightly. The parade reached the cathedral now. It is usual for parades in New York at this point to pass a reviewing stand filled with important people, but there were no dignitaries today, no important people, just crowds filling every foot of space, men and women, and the children who couldn't see it. It was here that Philip Benton, the factory owner, was standing. Something had gone from his assurance. His eyes behaved curiously. Suddenly, he broke from the crowd. He hurried beside the marchers, trying to keep pace, but it seemed he was losing ground.
Harry, my son. Oh, my son, it is you. You know what I did now. I sold you out. Yes, you and the rest with you. I wanted to help at first, but the money was too easy. Forgive me, Harry. I forgot.
There wasn't much more that happened. The parade was slowing down. The ranks of men were gathering deeper and deeper. As the tide of them backed up and filled the great avenue, an elderly man in Oxford cloth was seen kneeling on the sidewalk. The crowds parted a little for him. He seemed to be reaching toward a tall, gaunt, gray-faced marcher.
Charles, in the name of all things holy, give me your pardon. I broke the pledge we made. I have lived a worldly life. I sought to please vain people for my own vanity. I let faith go while you kept it. I turned from you and all these like you because it was easier. Charles, hear me. Don't turn from us now. We need you, Charles. We need you.
But the crowds closed in and no one knew if Dr. Cartwright saw the gesture of benediction from the hand of the tall gray marcher. Now the avenue and its sidewalks were a solid tide of humanity, and the men had stopped marching. They stopped before a big bronze monument that shows other men with fixed bayonets wearing the stiff hats and puttees of 1917, but men whose bronze faces bore the youth and the strength of these. Now they stood quietly, the men in blue, in whites, in dirty browns, in tattered green, men as far as you could see. How many? There were those who knew the number to be 382,532. A hush had fallen upon the city. Even the birds were quiet in the still, warm sunlight. No face stood out, no voice commanded. There was no leader, only the quiet. The waiting, white-faced crowds and the rows upon rows of silent men. Then it filled the air. The voice from nowhere.
We come to you as fragments of an hour, the relics of momentous dreams. We come to ask a question. Was it a tawdry dream you dreamt, and we? An idle fancy fit now for cynic jest? From our peculiar place of meditation, we think no. A loud and ringing and echoing no. But then, our answer is of small avail. Remember well that men have died this year, last year, 1,000 years gone for liberty. And always there were those who did not die, who in revulsion toward the bloody scenes, the pains and deprivations of the fight, cast out the hard-won grace of liberty and soiled its name with greed for selfish gain. We come today because we nurse the fear that you, in terror of your own dark thoughts, have draped forgetfulness upon the very things which yesterday gripped every decent heart and sent ourselves upon the fields of war. It would be idle now to name, to spell as maxims in a copybook, each thing for which we fought upon these fields. Perhaps, when as we fought, we were not sure ourselves. But now we truly know. We fought against the crime and curse of greed, greed that charts our latitudes of fear and builds an even viler crime, injustice. Oh, it is the right of man and of each nation to seek out profits from fair enterprise. But neither man nor nation has the right to profit from humiliation of another, or cast indignities to bolster up a purse. We shall not come again to march your streets in massive ranks and startle out your eyes. But singly and in good while, we shall return to look into the reaches of your souls. And we shall ask those times another question. Men long ago set out upon the paths which we have trod and reached the same dark end. With their last breaths, they lifted up a cry. Fitting, yea, sweet, to die for one's own land. Our question, is that true? Think well your answer.
Just heard The Parade by Margaret LeWorth as based upon the story They Passed This Way by Morris Markey, which appears in the December issue of McCall's magazine. Today's musical score was composed and conducted by Robert W. Stringer, and the workshop director was Richard Sandville. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That 385,000 people in the parade was the approximate number of American servicemen killed in World War II. You're listening to the Old Time Radio Hour, broadcast each week over the World Wide Web with your host, Justine Ward. The great American writer Gertrude Stein spent the years of World War II in France, and the next show is an adaptation of the novel she wrote about the amazing American servicemen who liberated France. They captured Stein's stream-of-consciousness style of writing in this dramatization. It was one of the last things she wrote. She died in July of 1946 at the age of 72. Enjoy Columbia Workshop, Bruzy and Willie, first broadcast October 12, 1946 on CBS.
Presenting Gertrude Stein's famous G.I. characters, Bruzy and Willie. The Columbia Workshop, radio's foremost laboratory of writing and production techniques, today presents one of the last published works of the famous American writer Gertrude Stein, who lived in France throughout the German occupation and then came to know and esteem the young soldiers of her native land, the slangy, restless, skeptical American G.I.
G.I.s and G.I.s and G.I.s, and they made me come all over patriotic. I was always patriotic. I was always, in my way, a Civil War veteran. But in between, there were other things, but now there are no other things.
That was the way Gertrude Stein used words, in a literary style all her own, with a rhythm of words sometimes used as much for their sound as their meaning, with a good deal of calculated word repetition for effect. In Bruzy and Willie, you hear G.I.s in France talking as the sound to Gertrude Stein. Bruzy, in particular, is a very gabby young fellow with opinions on nearly all subjects. Willie is his best pal and his best listener. The Columbia Workshop adaptation of Bruzy and Willie is by Gene Clough and is based upon the Random House edition. And now the rambling dialogues of Bruzy and Willie, directed by Richard Sandville, with a special musical score by Robert W. Stringer.
I think we're all funny, pretty funny about this fraternization.
Yeah, but
just listen. They didn't have to make any anti-fraternization ruling for the German army in France, because although the Germans did their best to fraternize, darn few French women would look at them. I kind of wonder, would our women be like French or be like German if the horrible happened and our country was conquered and occupied?
Well, I wouldn't want any American woman to be like a French woman.
No, you'd want them to be like the Germans, pal around with conquerors.
Oh, get out of here, Brucey. No American would have anything to do with any foreigner.
But you admire the Germans who do, Willie. Which do you want American women to be like?
I know what I don't want them to be like. I don't want them to be like any foreigner.
But all the fathers and mothers of all Americans were foreigners.
Oh, shut up, Brucey. What's that to you? I'll date any German fraulein who'll date me, and they all will.
Sure they will. But all the same, if our country was defeated and occupied, how about it?
Well, our country isn't going to be defeated and occupied. That's all there is to that.
Yes, but you never can tell in a war.
And that's the reason there ain't going to be any more war. Not if I can help it.
But if you can't help it, Willie.
I'll see to it that I do help it. There ain't going to be any more war.
But that's what they said last time, and here we are.
Well, did I say we weren't here? We're here, all right. You betcha we're here. And I'm going to fraternize with any German girl who fraternize with me, and they all will.
But, Willie, listen.
Ain't I listening? Ain't I always listening? You're always talking, and I'm always listening.
I want to know why you fellas feel the way you do. Tell me, Joe. You tell me.
Now, go away, Brucey. Don't you know we're disillusioned?
Yeah. Sure, sure, Joe. That's it. Disillusioned.
Hey, fellas, I got to go to the river and wait for a girl.
Where is she, Joe?
She's gone home to eat, but I said I'd sit on the riverbank and wait, and I'm gonna. Want to come along?
There ain't two?
No, there ain't but one. Want to come along?
Let's all three go.
That's all right with me. Come on.
The three GIs went to the river, and it was dark, but it did not rain.
It's a long war, but it will end, and then we'll go home.
Where's home?
What's your name?
Paul is my name, and if it ain't Paul, it's Donald. What do you want with my name?
I want to know how old you are and where you come from.
Nuts to that. Let's talk about beds.
What kind of beds?
Any kind. The kind you sleep in, the kind you make for yourself, and the kind others make for you. When you wish you were dead, you always wish for a bed. And when they put you in prison, they make you make your own bed. I was just reading about it this evening.
Yes, if there is a bed.
Yeah, you're right, if there is a bed. There are...
Yeah, there are.
Oh, what?
8 million unemployed in the next year.
And as they spoke, the American soldiers fell asleep by the riverbank. But later, Willie wasn't asleep, and he said...
Brucey?
I'm here.
What you doing?
I'm thinking about religion.
What religion?
Well, Willie, somebody said to me, why don't the GIs have the Bible around like the doughboys did? Why ain't there ever a Bible in a plane?
Why should there be? There ain't nothing the matter with the plane.
Of course, there could be.
Yeah, but if there could, it would be the ground crew's fault. And if there is any flak, you're taught how to dive in so it don't hit you. And if you don't do it right, it does.
What's the matter with you, Brucey? Don't you know all that?
Oh, yes, I know all that. They do say, though, that the doughboys in the last war always had Bibles around. That's what they say.
The sun was shining and they were all worried. There was nothing to worry about. The sun was shining and they were all worried. And then along came two girls.
Look, Red Cross nurses.
Willie, you remember what I was talking about? Yeah. I was talking about a lot of things. About are we isolationists or are we isolated?
Listen, he sounds interesting. Tell me, don't you think it's awful that the French have no leaders?
Haven't they?
We weren't talking to you. We were talking to him. He sounds interesting.
You're right there, sister. He not only sounds it, he is.
But how can the French expect to come back if they have no leaders?
Why? How? I don't know.
Yes, but he does. You tell us.
Yes, I'll tell you. A leader either doesn't lead you, or if he does, he leads you where you don't want to go. Isn't it so, sisters? Isn't it? Where do you want to go? Where do the French want to go? They don't want to go anywhere. They want enough to eat, a place to sleep, and fuel to keep them warm. That's what they want. Leaders never give you that. Leaders just better stay home for a while and lead everybody that way.
Yeah, let's go home.
I want to go home.
We want to go home.
Everybody wants to go home. Be it ever so humble, there's no place like home.
You know, I watch all those men, all that army going around excursioning in auto buses, so fat, so well-dressed, so taken care of. And I say to myself, they want to go home. And I say to myself, where is home? Where you get a belly full, that's home. Where you got no cares, that's home.
Ah, get out, Donald Paul. Home is home. Home is where you come from. That's fine, that's home.
You ain't got any imagination, Willie.
Nuts to imagination. I want to go home.
You will.
All too soon.
Shut up. If anybody's going to talk, it's Bruzy. Bruzy, you talk.
Not today, Willie, not today. I kind of don't understand anything today. I ain't no leader today. I'm kind of scared of being a leader today.
Ah, you're no leader, Bruzy. You just talk.
What do leaders do?
They talk, too. But they talk different.
Tell me, do you all talk like this every day?
Not every day.
Mostly every day.
I think we will come again.
The war is over and they have lots of time on their hands. So they talk, so they talk, so they talk.
Work. You know, I think American men work funny. They write to me from home, they've worked so hard, they never want to work that hard again.
Perhaps they won't have the chance.
What do you mean, Donald Paul?
Well, how about it? Any work to go back to, Joe?
Just as much as you.
Not so. I'm the only one of the whole bunch of you that don't have to look for work.
Why, are you so rich?
Too rich to work.
Well, anyway, I often think we soldiers complain, and we complain about what the officers have, but we don't complain how we have everything civilians don't have.
What do you mean, Brucey?
Well, don't we have food and clothes and shoes all the time? They take us everywhere and eat and free everything and no worries. I could almost cry when I think we all got to go back and be civilians and scratch and worry and then those bills. Pay everything on the installment plan and coming in and coming in. I could just bust out crying.
Well, we gotta cry. Let's go find some beer to cry into. Come along.
It was late afternoon, and the streets were narrow, and three Negro soldiers came along, and there was a very little girl and her mother. One of the Negroes fell on his knee like a cavalier before the little girl and took her hand. The mother went on and then stood slightly shy looking at her little girl. And the little girl, a little shy, shook the hand of the kneeling soldier. He said a word in French. She answered him. She was a very little girl, only 5 years old. The other two had gone on. He rose from his knee and he went on. The little girl went along with her mother.
It's funny the way a colored guy always finds some little colored children to talk to.
Donald Paul said. He said he wanted the government to take over everything.
I hope you answered him back that the first thing they ought to take over is this blasted army. If they manage other things the way they manage this, then they better had keep their hands off. That's all I gotta say. Keep their hands off.
You couldn't be righter.
Ain't the government back of this army? Ain't this the most wasteful, bad-managed piece of machinery? Ain't we all no good?
Still right.
I tell you, boys, there ain't any answer. And anybody says there is, you, Bruzy, and that lousy Donald Paul, there ain't going to be any answer. There never has been an answer. That's the answer. There ain't going to be any answer.
I don't see why everybody's so scared. Nothing to be scared about. My brother lived through the Depression. He always had a job. What you scared about?
Bruzy, tell him.
You always listen to Bruzy.
Sure, I listen to Bruzy. You know what he says is true, and you just don't have to listen, and that's just fine.
Hey, tell me something. Anybody tell me something. If it's true, and it is, and now we've got less iron ore left than Canada, why are we going home to jobs to use up what iron ore we do have making gadgets? Now tell me why we want to rush home to work at a job so our children won't have no iron ore and be just like those European people.
That is what you call a high standard of living.
How many more installment plans does that mean? Ain't there any other kind of work to do than make those gadgets? Ain't there?
Not that any American wants to do. We want to work making gadgets, and that's what we'll do. We'll stand in line till we get a job making gadgets. And somebody else will stand in line till he gets a job to sell them on the installment plan. And then we'll all be dead, and why worry?
I do worry, though, Willie. You see, industrialism, well, England began it. They made machines, and they turned out, well, not like we do, but a whale of a lot of goods. But they had all their colonies to dump them on and their possessions. You know about how the sun never sets on them?
Never shines in them, that's all I know.
Well, we horned in after our Civil War.
We went industrial, and we had more everything than they had, and we got richer and they got poorer. And their markets, that is, the people in their empire, slowed down in buying. And they used up their raw material, and then they tried to get new places to sell to, like Egypt and Africa.
Foreigners.
You just wait. And there we were, getting richer and richer, and why? Because we had our outside market right at home. We had immigration. Thousands and millions coming in every year into our country.
Foreigners?
But as soon as they made some money...
Then they were American.
And the more they came, the more they made. Well, then you know what happened. After the last war, we cut off immigration. We hoped to sell enough to foreign countries, but foreign countries didn't want to buy. And we had the Depression.
We sure did have the Depression.
And then we had to fight. And yes, we won, but we used up an awful lot of raw material. And now we got to go home and make stuff to use up some more. And have gadgets that nobody but our little population wants to buy.
Oh, dear, it does just sound too awful.
The Red Cross sisters again. Ain't we popular?
My father used to say it would happen. He was an Englishman, and he said it would happen.
Why bring him into it?
Well, he did say it. He said when they cut off immigration, little girl, you'll see right here in this big, rich, prosperous country, you'll see a real depression. Not just busted booms, but a big depression.
But, Brucey, what do you mean? What can any of us do but go home, get a job if we can, make the gadgets you say nobody has money to buy, and buy them ourselves on the installment plan, and borrow money from the finance company to sort of worry along? What can we do? You want us to starve?
That's just what the English are saying.
Sister, will you forget the English?
How can I when we're doing just like them? Listen, I heard some men talking.
Frenchmen this time?
No, they weren't French. And they said, why do Americans make such a fuss and everyone should be grateful to them? Don't they know they didn't come over to Europe to fight till they were attacked at Pearl Harbor? And then they came over to protect the rear of their country.
It's a fact.
And then, well, they crossed the channel all right, but they were fighting a pretty broken German army, had all its best troops killed in Russia. And they thought France was fine when they had the French resistance to help them. But when they got to Germany with no guerrillas to help, it didn't go so well. Then the Germans almost broke through with a used-up army.
Janet, did you sit there and listen to those men say things like that about your country?
It was their country, too. They were
Americans. You mean to say you sat there and listened to Americans talk like that about America? About the American army?
I didn't sit, Pauline. I stood.
It isn't true, Janet. It isn't. Nothing's true that makes the American army sound like that. I'm going home. You'll find out how wrong you are.
Don't worry, sister. I met two soldiers just yesterday who never have and never can worry. And why can't they? Why don't they? Well, because they're too young. They're so young, they just smile. Don't you worry, sister. There are lots of them too young to worry. They just smile.
There, the army of occupation, Willie and Bruzy and Joe and Donald Paul and the others. When they was fighting, they weren't lonely because there was always danger with them. Now they're lonesome and bored and they keep talking, always talking, American talk, wondering, hard-boiled, tired talk.
Well, Bruzy, now I've talked. You talk and tell us how to save ourselves from death and measles.
Death ain't so bad, but measles. Any of you ever had measles?
Yeah. You shut up tight, Joe. Everybody's had measles. Let Bruzy begin.
Well, I'm going to begin because I have a lot to say. Let's begin with the Civil War. Well, it was a mistake.
I come from Georgia. Mistake is the word.
The South should never have fought. She should have let her slaves be bought off. Slavery's wrong, whatever you say.
Sure, nobody in the South talks about that anymore.
Well, how about states' rights? That's what they fought for.
That's just it, Donald. Paulie didn't. If they wanted states' rights, the way to have done was to let their slaves be compensated for. Then they would have been so strong politically, they would have beaten out on states' rights. I tell you, the Civil War was a mistake, and we're all suffering for it.
How come? How are you suffering?
Because the South, it would have acted like a brake on the North.
Kind of a dead weight, you mean?
No, not necessarily dead. A counterweight to keep us from going ahead so fast.
All right, we were fighting so people wouldn't have to say yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am.
Now listen.
You listen to me. I got something real to say.
Okay, Donald Paul.
The trouble with us all Americans, we think we're up to date, but we're old-fashioned. Well, we think about war, what we think about Germans. We think about them just like the last lot did 25 years ago.
No, no.
Yes, we do. We like them, the Heinies, because they have electric lights and fixings. If there's anything old-fashioned, it's just that. We think war is wine, women, and song, and heroes. We're just old-fashioned. As old-fashioned as a pin-up girl.
What's the matter with a pin-up girl?
Nothing's the matter with a pin-up girl if you just know it's old-fashioned.
It was coming on winter. It always is coming on winter when summer is over, and it was coming on winter. And it comes on dark when it comes on winter.
Okay, Bruiser, you can talk. You can afford to talk. Fellas like you don't need a job. You live, just live. Everybody's got to see to it you live. But fellas like us, well, we got to have jobs. Talk all you like, but when we get home and don't wear this brown, we got to have a job, job, job.
Well, some have to have jobs. Some got to be employed and be employees, but not so many, Willie. That's what I want to say. Industrialism makes employees stop thinking, stop feeling, makes them all feel alike.
You make industrialism sound like chewing gum. You chew and you chew, but it don't feed you. It's got a kind of taste, but that's all there is to it. Have I got it right, kind of?
The thing to do is to use our common sense.
Here come the sisters. You might just as well wait till I get here.
Oh, for crying out loud.
Before you talk anymore, I want to know if there's going to be an answer. Because if there isn't, I think I'll go back.
Is there going to be any answer, Bruzy? The sister wants to know. She's very polite, but she certainly wants to know.
If you're right, and it does kind of seem so, Bruzy, the more we work, the poorer our country gets, and the more depressions we have. What's the answer, Bruzy? You got an answer? Give it to us.
You mind if I begin again from the beginning?
We can't help ourselves if we do mind. And we do.
Be quiet, sister. You make him kind of nervous. Let him talk. Let him tell us how to be useful but poor.
No, how to be hopeful, though poor.
Oh, that's something.
But if we hadn't been industrial the way we were, how would we have won this war?
Did we win?
Yes, we did win this war.
Well, then, with that behind us, we can settle down to be poor but honest.
Not so much on the honest. Ever hear of stealing?
Stealing what?
Go anywhere in the occupied country, and what does everybody do? They steal.
Sure they do, and then they gamble it away, and they go home poor but honest.
Poor it is, I know.
Listen, Willie, you kind of think I go over it all too much. You're like anybody with a story. You want the middle to go faster. But that's it, Willie, that's it. It's going too fast. You've got to slow it down. Sure, you want the end, but there isn't any end. You've got to go slower. This is what has to happen. When you get back, you have to pioneer, and pioneering is slow work.
Pioneer what?
Just pioneer.
I want to try and get a job over here. You want to stay in this lousy Europe?
Yes, in a way. You see, my mind's confused, so I want to stay and try and...
I suppose you've been listening to Bruzy.
No, I haven't. Who's Bruzy?
That's Bruzy. Well, how did you get your mind so confused if you didn't listen to Bruzy? Who are you, anyway?
I'm Henry.
Hey, Bruzy! New recruit for you to confuse more. Name's Henry.
Don't you see... We're just a lot of employees obeying a boss with no mind of our own. And if it goes on, where's America?
He's right.
Listen, I don't want to see us get more employee-minded. Employed by the big factory owners, employed by the strikers, employed by the government, employed by the labor unions.
Well, who do you want should employ you? Who do you want should give you a job?
I don't want a job. I want a pioneer.
Oh, you make me tired. You sound like Bruzy. Bruzy, explain to this guy what pioneering is.
I don't know yet. I'm thinking.
Well, I think... You let Bruzy do the thinking. That's the way we are in this outfit.
That just shows how employee you are, Willie.
Ah, get out of here.
Some of the real pioneering American these days were done by Negroes. They find new places, new home, new lives. And they more and more own something.
Whatever was it we were talking about?
What do you think? Women and chickens and yellow butterflies and potatoes. Of course, I'm not talking. I only listen, and it never listens good.
But I want to know.
You'll know. Any moment of the day or night, they talk, and they always talk about it.
About what?
About what it's about what to do about it. Just listen, sister.
You know what they're all talking about at home? They're talking about free trade.
I know. My father...
The British again.
Wouldn't it be beautiful if everybody just stopped working?
Now they are taking a walk and talking, talking.
You know, they used to say be your age. I kind of wonder sometimes, are we that age? Everybody says we're sad. How old do you have to be sad? How young can you be to be lonesome?
You sure are talking funny. Everybody is. Maybe it's because we're going to be redeployed. Isn't that a nice word? Redeployed.
They make it a word like that because they won't be responsible if we have a job or not.
Funny, very funny. And sometimes nobody knows how funny it is.
If you don't like the word redeployment, if it kind of makes you nervous, How about reconversion?
That is only a word. Reconversion turns out to be only a word.
It's lousy.
So what can we do about it?
Well, what have we got that nobody else has got?
The atomic bomb.
Not so got. Everybody says not so got.
All right, then, not the atomic bomb. What is it we got, then?
We like a pioneer.
There ain't no wilderness no more.
Shut up, everybody. Here comes that cute Pauline and her girlfriend.
Hey, go on, Bruzy. How do you pioneer without a wilderness?
There's lots of wilderness out where I live. Around where I live, it's all wilderness.
But can you pioneer in that wilderness of yours?
Why not? Yes, they can if they've any guts. They don't expect it to be easy.
All right, sister, all right.
I say if you all are ready to break down what's been built up, that's pioneering. Here in Europe, they broke down what they built, and now they're all just as busy as anything pioneering. And they're kind of happy doing it.
Not so happy by their looks.
Sister, you're funny. What do you want? Do you want us to drop our atomic bombs on ourselves? Is that what you want, so we can go out and pioneer?
Well, yes, kind of.
I get you.
Let's begin again. We're all getting funny.
Not so funny at that.
Now the boys are talking about the girls. This is very GI, but Rosie is a thinker.
She was cute, that Pauline, about wilderness and pioneering. Didn't you think she was cute, Rosie?
Be serious, Willie.
All right, but you never say what to do. Thinking is all you do, Bruzy, but living is what we all got to do. How's everybody going to live? I say she was cute.
Well, if I'm right, they mostly aren't going to live.
Sure, you're right, Bruzy, but look at everybody over here. By rights, they ought all to be dead. All of them, over and over again, dead. And they ain't, Bruzy. Far from it. They seem, from the looks of them, to be more living than ever before. Now, that's the trouble with all the thinking. Some get rich and some get poor, but all the same, they go on living. No matter what does happen, everybody somehow goes on living. You see, Bruzy, you gotta hold out a little hope.
The hope is that our generation is more solid, more scared, more articulate than the last one.
You sure are crazy. You sure are crazy. They all think they're the only thing there is. You wait a minute. Hey, you guys, stop talking about how much you pay for cognac anywhere you are and how much you got to pay more than anybody else and how much cognac you had yesterday. Just come over and tell this guy, Bruzy, what you think foreigners are and what you think Americans are. Come on over.
Okay, come on. Americans?
Yeah, we Americans, we ride wide and handsome and everybody admires us.
Oh, do they?
Yes, they do. Why wouldn't they? Ain't we got everything they want?
Do they want it?
Sure they do. They see us riding so wide and handsome.
Wide, all right, but not so handsome.
Over here, they live with their chickens and all. They're just so poor.
But they have chickens to live with.
But that ain't progress.
What is?
And do you think it's right they charge me twice as much for cognac as they charge a Frenchman?
Your dollar means more.
I'm just a poor American soldier. And it isn't right I should pay more. Anyway, I was just sitting there.
Yes, you were just sitting there with your lonesome dollar.
What do you mean? I may be poor, but I got more than $1.
Not that. What I mean is the United States dollar is a very lonesome dollar. It's riding wide and handsome, but it's riding all alone. Nobody can use it. Maybe pretty soon we can't use it.
What do you mean?
I mean that our dollar is a lonesome dollar. And if you get kind of lonesome, you get to be no good. And if you get to be no good, you go kind of bad. And if you go kind of bad, you don't get it all. And where are you? Nowhere, are you? I tell you, our fine dollar is just lonesome.
Shut up, Donald Paul.
The worst of everything is it always sounds true.
Well, Brucey, we got him. The order has come.
Yes, I know.
Hello, Joe. We got him.
Sure, we got him.
We are the boys who are redeployed in a little boat on a little shore. It makes me feel funny. Kind of funny. Nothing but jobs. Well, Bruzy, do we like it?
Yes, we do like it. But go slow.
Here we are. We heard you boys are moving out.
Where's Pauline?
She stopped to pick you a flower.
God bless her for that sweet thought.
Tell me, won't you miss talking when you get home? You do know, don't you, that nobody talks like you boys talk. Not back home.
Yeah, we know.
Except Bruzy. He'll talk. Bruzy will talk, but we won't be there to listen. We kind of will remember that he's talking somewhere, but we won't be there to listen. There won't be anybody talking where we'll be.
But perhaps they will talk now. Perhaps they will over there.
Not those on the job, they won't. Not those on the job.
Well,
GIs and GIs and GIs, and they've made me come all over patriotic. I was always patriotic. I was always, in my way, a Civil War veteran. But in between, there were other things. But now there are no other things. And I am sure that this particular moment in our history is more important than anything since the Civil War. We are there where we have to fight a spiritual pioneer fight. You just have to find a new way. You have to find out how you can go ahead without running away with yourselves. You have to learn to produce without exhausting your country's wealth. You have to learn to be individual. You have to get courage enough to know what you feel and not just all be yes or no men. But you have to really learn to express complications. Go easy. And if you can't go easy, go as easy as you can. Remember the Depression. Don't be afraid to look it in the face and find out the reason why. If you don't find out the reason why, you'll go poor. And how I would hate to have my native land go poor. Find out the reason why. Look facts in the face. Not just what they all say, the leaders, but every one of you, so that a government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the face of the earth. It won't. Somebody else will do it if we lie down on the job. But of all things, don't stop. Find out the reason why of the Depression. Find it out, each and every one of you, and then look facts in the face. We are Americans.
You have eavesdropped upon the rambling dialogues of Brusey and Willie by Gertrude Stein, as adapted for the Columbia Workshop by Gene Clough and based upon the Random House edition. The special musical score was by Robert W. Springer, and the workshop director was Richard Sandville. Every week, the workshop presents something different, with special emphasis upon the unusual and the experimental. Next week and the week following, the workshop will present a two-part version of the immortal American classic of the sea, Moby Dick, by Herman Melville, as adapted for radio by Ernest Kinoy. Howard G. Barnes will direct Moby Dick for the Columbia Workshop. Saturday night is good listening with CBS. Listen now over most of these same stations for the famous correspondent Larry Lesser and the news. He'll be with you in just a moment. Don Baker speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
You have been listening to the Old Time Radio Hour, broadcast each week over the World Wide Web. You can subscribe at no charge through Apple Podcasts, Podbean, or RSS. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you can join us again next week for another hour of entertainment from the golden age of radio. Until then, this is your host, Justine Ward, saying so long for now.